Welcome to the Journeys of Scientists podcast. This is a podcast put out by WAMPS, which stands for Women and Minorities in the Physical Sciences. We are a graduate student organization at Michigan State University. I am Brian Stanley. I am a graduate student in the physics department at MSU. The purpose of this podcast is to talk with other graduate students at MSU and other universities to get a sense of the type of research they do, but also learn about life as a graduate student, both within and outside the classroom or research lab. If you or someone else you know are interested in participating in the Journeys of Scientists podcast, you can email me at the email below in the show notes, or you can visit the WAMPS website, which is www.wamps.org, and you can send us a message there. On this episode, we are joined by Sarah McGuire, a third-year PhD student in the Department of Computational Mathematics, Science, and Engineering at MSU. Her current research interests involve applied topology and machine learning applications for graph structured data. Hope you enjoy. Welcome, Sarah. Could you briefly introduce yourself? What is the type of field that you're in and the type of work that you do?
Sure. I'm Sarah. I'm a grad student in the Department of CMSE, which is Computational Math, Science, and Engineering at MSU, and I work with applied topology and machine learning on graph structured data, so working with graphs and also simplicial complexes, and just how that can be applied to machine learning type things.
Okay. What year are you?
I'm a third year, starting my third year.
Okay. So you're all done with classes and everything?
Yep. Wrapping up classes, and I'll just focused on research, which is a nice change.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned like machine learning and topography and stuff. Or is it pretty like general theoretical stuff are you doing? Or are you applying this to like a context? Like I am graphing topography of like something specific.
Right. So I actually find myself more on the applied side. I come from a mostly math background with some computer science. But primarily I think about when I think about data, I'm working in terms of graphs or simplicial complexes. So when I say graphs, I mean a graph in the mathematical sense, meaning a collection of nodes and edges between them that models the data in some way. So modeling a connection between those two nodes. For example, like a collaboration network where each researcher is a specific node, and then there's an edge between those two nodes if those two researchers wrote a paper together. But then for a simplicial complex, we introduce more higher dimensional information. So that's where the applied topology comes in. From the math side, there's the applied topology background there. And this is similar to a graph as a structure, but they have different types of building blocks you can work with. So instead of just nodes and edges now, we can include higher dimensional connections, so like triplets of people or quadruplets of people, and those are called simplices. So for example, from the collaboration network, instead of just having two people that wrote a paper together, maybe you have a paper with three authors on it, and you want to include that as information on your simplicial complex. So that would be represented by a two simplex, which is that triplet of people.
Okay. So what got you interested in like this area?
So I started as an undergrad math major, and I took a topology class, like point set topology, with my undergrad research advisor, and it was really interesting. And we started working on a research project on the side that sort of had to do with Klee complexes, which is similar to a simplicial complex. And that was where I was first introduced to topology. So it was always in the back of my head. And then when I ended up going to grad school, I was really interested in the machine learning applications, but still wanted to hang on to my interest in topology. So I'm actually able to do both of these things now. I'm sort of working with both fields, and I have two advisors, one who focuses more on the machine learning side of things and one who's an applied topologist. She does topology and topological data analysis projects.
Okay. I'm going to have you like explain because I'm dumb and I don't know like the right words. But so like topology, like the first thing I think of is like a topographical map of like, oh, okay, here's like elevation and change. Like if I'm thinking like very, very basic or whatever. But you like, obviously topology comes in like many different forms. So what exactly is like topology? Is it just like a three-dimensional graph or something? Or is it like much deeper than that?
Right. So topology is sort of a very large field of mathematics. And we are concerned with shape and maps, but not the maps that people would typically think of when you say topology. So it's actually maps, like functions mapping between one space to another space, and interested in how we can compare these spaces. So topologists would think of spaces that are similar to each other. You can change them by continuously deforming them without breaking it or like ripping it and cutting it. And if you're able to do that, to continuously deform it, like you're working with Play-Doh, then you'd say those two spaces are the same. So it's a way to compare a high dimensional shape and not just limited to, say, two or three dimensions, but bring up higher dimensional information. And then up to this stretching and twisting and bending, they're the same.
Okay. Yes. Thank
you. Very interesting like mathematical proofs, and it's a very large branch of mathematics.
Okay. So you said you originally majored in math. Where did you do your undergrad?
So I went to a small liberal arts college in Massachusetts, Holy Cross, and it's about like 40 miles outside of Boston.
Okay. How did you end up there?
My aunt and uncle actually went there, and that's how I first had heard about it. Pretty small school, and I grew up in upstate New York, so I might not have otherwise known about it, but they had a great math department when I went to visit, and that's how I ended up there. And I was also a computer science minor, but it was a great school for me because I was able to work closely with my research advisor, and I was actually able to work on research as an undergrad student, which isn't always the case for people.
Okay. Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. Cause I think of like liberal arts school, like you're in a small class, maybe there's only like a handful of students even in your grade and stuff. So like, how was that experience then transitioning into, you know, like grad school where, you know, there's 60,000 people here.
Right. It was actually okay because I spent my junior year as a visiting student at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland.
Oh, very cool.
So I had a little bit of exposure to what it's like being at a large research university. And so that sort of prepared me for the larger class size and just being sort of a very one small student in a very large class of students. So that was good in that sense. And then, yeah, coming to MSU, I guess my department now is still relatively small. It's a pretty new department. I think it was only started in 2016. So our cohort sizes are still relatively small here as well, so my class sizes haven't changed too much.
Okay. What was your experience in Scotland, right? Like,
It was great. When I was there, I mostly took classes in the College of Informatics, which is basically computer science. And so that was, very, very difficult. Some of the, classes don't necessarily translate well level-wise between the US and the UK. So I ended up in some graduate level computer science classes. So it was a little out of my element there, but I struggled through and still made it to grad school. So it worked out.
Were you just there for like a year?
I was there for a year, yes.
Okay.
So two full semesters, and then I was not there for the summer.
Okay. Did you partake in any like non-school related activities while you're in Scotland, or you go explore different areas and things like that?
I did a lot of traveling. That was one nice thing about being there for a full year is that I was able to feel at home in Scotland and really explore Scotland as well as travel a lot to other countries. So that was really great. I also happened to join the badminton team, which was wildly competitive, and I didn't last long on the team, but that was a fun little new thing that I tried while I was there.
Super cool. Is badminton big there, or is it just a...
I'm not sure. It may be just bigger than in the US, but it was also a very diverse student population there. There was many visiting students from other countries and just permanent students that were from all over the world. So I got to meet a lot of really interesting people while I was there.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. How did this like opportunity kind of come about of going to Scotland?
So Holy Cross really encourages study abroad for most of their students. I think probably 60% of my class was abroad one or two semesters of their junior year. So they really encourage it. And I ended up doing it, not one of the Holy Cross sponsored study abroad programs. I wanted to go to this school that they didn't have a program for. So I just independently applied to be a visiting student at the University of Edinburgh, and I was accepted there. So they, the Holy Cross let me do study abroad.
Oh, very great. Very cool. So when you're an undergrad at Holy Cross, you mentioned that you worked in like a research lab. How early on did you start there? Was it early on or kind of later?
It was pretty soon, actually. I took this topology class with Dr. David Damiano, and at the end of it, we were working on sort of final projects for the class. And he mentioned to me that he had this data set he had access to and potential research project coming out of it, and wanted to know if I'd be interested in working on it. So that was the end of my sophomore year. So I did a summer research program at Holy Cross that summer and worked on this data set with him. And then the project just continued, and I worked part-time during the school year on the project. And then the next summer, and then it ended up becoming the basis for my senior thesis. So I worked on it the rest of the time that I was at Holy Cross.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Were you involved with like any clubs or sports and other like extracurriculars during like undergrad?
Yeah, I was a member of the club soccer team, which was a fun break from all the schoolwork. I know I spent a lot. It was a different lifestyle in college of working and then going to soccer practice at 11:30 at night. But
oof, yeah, yeah. Very cool. What position did you play in soccer?
Defense.
Okay. Is that a lot of... I know nothing about soccer. Short of, I know that there's goalie and not goalie. In my mind, those are the two positions. But
definitely not goalie.
So is that the like high running, you know, position, or you just kind of like hang back?
Not as bad as midfields, but depends on the day.
Okay. Did you play soccer like your entire time, like growing up?
Yeah. I've always played. And then actually, since I've been at MSU, the CMSC department had a intramural soccer team. So I was able to continue. Before the pandemic, we had a team of grad students and postdocs and faculty.
Ooh, so very nice.
Very fun.
Very nice. Any hopes of like doing that now that things have kind of opened up, and now that there's like IM Sports are like opening that up again?
Probably not this year. I think a lot of people in our department have been slow to go back. I know I haven't been really in the office much. So probably not this year, but hopefully next year.
Okay. I'm guessing like all of your stuff, like it doesn't matter like really where you're located on when you do it.
Yeah. We do, because the department is so computing focused and everyone's working on, you know, computational problems and algorithms, that it's all on a computer. No one's really working in wet labs, so we don't have to be physically on campus.
Are you still in the Lansing area?
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Okay. So then how did you end up at MSU? Like how do you end up here?
Right. So after that research project started, that was my first exposure to what mathematical research would look like. And I continued that for a while. And I was actually thinking that I would like to be an actuary. So I had taken the first exam, and that was sort of the plan I saw for myself. And then spending more time doing research, I decided that that probably wasn't for me. And I really liked doing research and working with data, and that I saw that as being more in my future than being an actuary. So by my senior year, while I was writing my thesis, I decided to apply to graduate programs, both master's and PhD programs. And then when I got into CMSC at MSU, I was sort of comparing that against more traditional applied math programs. And I felt like it was a better fit for me because it was so interdisciplinary. And I really liked that it's all different domain science research areas working together, and they're all doing computational type projects. So that's sort of what unifies us, but we're still able to work between different domains. Like, we have computer scientists, mathematicians, statisticians, computational biologists, physicists, everyone on this like very, very large umbrella, but we're all unified by the fact that we're working on computation and algorithm driven research.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So then, like, how big is like the actual group that you're a part of? Is it mainly just like you and your advisor working on some project, or are there like other collaborators you have?
So for me, I actually have two advisors. I'm advised by Dr. Liz Munch and Dr. Matthew Hearn. So Liz's group is probably maybe five or so grad students and two or three postdocs. And there are some subsets that work together on projects, but for the most part, we do similar projects, but working on separate things. Okay. So we still have our weekly lab meetings where we update on what we're working on and give presentations on our research, but we're mostly working on different projects with our advisors. And then the same for Dr. Matthew Hearn's group.
Okay, very nice, very nice. So then, like, what are the type of things that you do outside of researcher classes now? Like, I saw in the little thing that you sent me, like, you do crocheting and like other things like that.
Yeah, I really like to crochet and do jigsaw puzzles. I think both of them are sort of relaxing activities for me that I can do without thinking too much. Mm-hmm. I find that if I'm watching TV, I have to be doing something else, like doing a solitaire on my phone or mm-hmm. a jigsaw puzzle or crocheting. So it's a good outlet for me to work on something.
How big of like puzzles do you do?
Like 1,000 or so pieces.
Do you do 2,000. Like the physical puzzles, or do you do it on like a phone or something?
Both. I prefer physical puzzles, but I do have an app on my iPad that I can do jigsaw puzzles on. It's not as satisfying as assembling a physical puzzle.
Very nice. Do you, when you finish a puzzle, do you like keep it up somewhere, or do you just like, okay, did that, tear it up?
And oh, then not back usually. Tear it up and do it again in a couple years. My family is always big on jigsaw puzzles. We do that a lot when we're together. So we have to disassemble them so we could redo them next time.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool. What are the type of stuff that like you crochet?
Oh, anything rectangular.
Okay.
I can do it. So I'm really not that great, but I can crochet in a rectangle. So a scarf or a blanket.
Okay. Nice placemat.
The most of my abilities. Yes.
I relate to that. So in the physics group, which I will now promote and you can come join, like we have our own little like knitting club sort of thing. If you ever want to join in, I make rectangular things.
Yeah. I know people do very interesting things with knitting and crocheting special mm-hmm. shapes. I know at there's a huge math conference every year, the joint mathematics meetings, mm-hmm. and there's always a special display of mathematical artwork that people submit. And there's always a whole table of crocheted, really cool, intricate knots and like torus type shapes. It's just very impressive considering my abilities to only crochet rectangular things.
So like, how does crocheting like differ from like the other like needle things? Like, is it just like a different type of needle or what?
Yeah. So knitting uses the two needles and crocheting has just one hook.
Okay.
So you always have at least one little loop with a knot over your hook.
Okay.
And then you wrap it around and loop it through different ways.
Okay. How did you get into that? Was that like another family sort of thing?
It was. Yeah. My grandmother taught me when I was little. And I have picked it up more at different parts in my life.
Very cool. Very cool. So then, okay. So you lived in upstate New York and you lived in Massachusetts and now you're in Michigan. Do you prefer like any one of those places over the other, or like when you're done with grad school and you're like, I'm going to move somewhere else just to see the world?
I would say I don't have too much of a preference. Honestly, the weather and everything is pretty much the same across the board, especially between Michigan and upstate New York. They're very similar. Lots of snow in the winter. Yeah, I guess I don't have a preference, but I do like that I've lived in a lot of different places. It's especially like being in Scotland for a year and then, you know, traveling around a little bit with that. I feel like I've been able to live enough different places that I'd be fine. Not going anywhere too crazy when I'm done, I promise you.
I have another really dumb question as someone who's never been to like the East Coast. Of is upstate New York just like saying not New York City?
Depends on who you ask. Yeah, it depends on who you ask. I'm actually from near Rochester, New York, which is actually Western New York.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Awesome. So then I guess sort of wrapping things up like a little bit, do you have any like advice or tips of wisdom that you would give, you know, either undergraduates thinking about going to grad school or like first year grad students, you know, kind of adapting to the grad school life?
Yeah. My biggest piece of advice would be to talk to current grad students, especially before you commit to a program. I think more often than not, they're very willing to speak with prospective students and give a more candid review of what it's like to be a grad student in that department. I think one of the biggest things for me when I was deciding on where I'd like to be was figuring out if that department is more of like a collaborative environment or a competitive environment. And I know in grad school that can make all the difference. So I'm very lucky that I ended up in CMSE, and I have found it to be very collaborative, and we're able to, you know, work on problem sets together and work through problems and talk about assignments and sort of get through the difficult qual classes together. And I know that's not necessarily always the case. So it's important to talk to current grad students to get a feel for the department. The other thing I would say is to make sure that the advisor you're choosing is someone that you actually would like working with, because you end up spending a lot of time with them. And it's really important that you're able to work well together and not just that your research interests align. So I know that's obviously very important. You need to be, especially if you're in a PhD program, you have to be applying and start seeking out advisors that have similar research interests to your own. But you also need to work well together.
So I'm going to ask you a question that, you know, everyone's probably going to ask you and you're probably tired of hearing, but like, what is kind of like the next step that you would like to kind of go into? Is like, do you want to continue doing research, or do you want to go out into like the real world, like industry type things?
Right. Ideally, I would like to have the best of both worlds and continue doing research type work, but in industry. So maybe like research and development type positions. And I really love the machine learning research I'm doing right now. And I think that, I mean, it certainly has a lot of different applications in different industry fields. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to still have a research type job but in industry, not necessarily in academia.
Okay. Yeah, that's super
cool. I was a TA, but I loved being a TA. It was a very enjoyable experience, but I don't think that the professor lifestyle is a good fit for my interests.
So what is a TA for, like, in CMC sort of like, because to me, like, when I think like, oh, I was a TA for like physics labs and I helped answer questions or whatever, to me, it just seems like a lot of stuff is like trying to find out where someone misplaced a comma or, you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the class I was TAing, it was 201. So it's basically an introduction to data science and coding in Python. And it's for students that are not necessarily coming from a computing background. So any major, you know, these undergrad students would take this class. It's an introduction. So yeah, it is a flipped classroom, which is great. I really loved that setup for this class. And so they're working in small groups for most of the lecture period, and they're trying to work through these Jupyter Notebook problems and figure out like small little snippets of code to solve problems. Mm-hmm. So yes, it is a lot of comma and semicolon chasing, and trying to debug code live is difficult for your own. It's very, very difficult for someone else's.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That, to me, that doesn't sound stressful, because I'm like, oh, I'm a terrible coder to begin with. So
sometimes it helps though, because I know what mistake I would make, and so I'm able to find that same mistake in students' code.
Yeah. When did you like first learn to like code?
I actually took a basic computer science class in high school in Java. I would say that I probably didn't get much out of that class, and I didn't come back to it until my sophomore year of undergrad, when I took an intro class in the computer science department. And after the first one, I really enjoyed it and ended up picking up the computer science minor.
Okay.
But even then, I really hadn't worked with Python until I got to grad school, just because of the way the computer science department was designed at my undergrad institution.
Okay. Do you have like a preferred language of choice?
Now I do Python.
Okay. Is there, once again, showing my ignorance here, like, to me, like, I know like different languages are like very good at doing like particular thing, but to me, it seems like the biggest difference is just like syntax things. Like, do you find that different languages really are better at like specific type of things, or for what you do, just like Python works?
Because it becomes probably more important if you're working with like heavy computational tasks. So there are certain languages that are better for dealing with different types of data, and depending on how you're storing the data, different languages were better. And also with a lot of the linear algebra stuff, it becomes very computationally expensive. So there's different packages written in different languages that are optimized to do those things better. So in that situation, it becomes important. But for me, I think Python is just the most accessible and easy for the things that I'm doing.
Do you do a lot of stuff that like requires a lot of like computational power, where you like really you're working on like some massive computer or something?
Sometimes I have used the High Performance Computing Center at MSU. Everyone in CMSC gets the HPCC access, and we use it in varying degrees. But I have used that before. The project I'm currently working on, not so much. We just haven't gotten to that point of really using enough data that it would require that much computational power, but we'll see.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you for coming on and doing this. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.